Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you.
My guest this week is Elizabeth Hackinson. Elizabeth is the Global Chief Information Officer of Schneider Electric. As CIO, she's responsible for providing all of the IT services and collaboration tools while managing the enterprise systems for the entire company. Since joining the firm in December of 2017, Elizabeth has led digital transformation efforts, which have been focused on adopting new digital technologies, eliminating technical debt, supporting innovation within IT, pushing new collaboration tools forward, and using virtual assistants to transition away from email. She brings decades of IT experience to the role, as she was previously the Chief Information Officer of MCI, Alcatel-Lucent, and ACI. In this interview, Elizabeth provides details from her first 100 days as CIO, when she made multiple trips around the world to speak with as many business peers, customers, and employees as possible. Early in her tenure, a key IT leader stepped down, resulting in Elizabeth being forced into a dual role of global CIO and head of IT for North America. Though more than she expected, the dual role allowed Elizabeth to immerse herself into some of the challenges that operations were facing, and she was exposed to new leaders, challenges, and opportunities in IT. We also discuss Elizabeth's relationship with her predecessor and current chief digital officer of Schneider Electric, Hervé Couré, Schneider's approach to eliminating technical debt, and Elizabeth's take on the evolution of the CIO role. And now a word from our sponsor. Technovation is brought to you by Fortinet. I recently caught up with Fortinet's Chief Information Security Officer, Phil Quaid, and he discussed the expanding threat landscape that IT executives and companies more generally encounter daily, and the ways in which Fortinet's security fabric can help.
Almost every organization faces an expanding attack surface caused by digital transformation, threat actors that automate sophisticated attacks, and a growing cybersecurity skills gap. It's more urgent than ever for security leaders to not only be technologists, but strategists that can enable business. The fundamental elements of cybersecurity are speed and integration. Combined with segmentation and access control, you can build a foundation that tilts the odds in your favor, defending at your points of strength. Fortinet can help. Our security fabric spans your entire networked environment from the IoT endpoint through your core and into multi-cloud environments. We integrate each security element to address today's growing threat environment, protecting the expanding attack surface and reduce complexity. This enables actionable threat intelligence to be shared at speed and scale, and automated mitigations that shrink risk windows. It's the cybersecurity strategy and technology used to protect the highest end systems, and it's now accessible to both enterprise and SMB. Just because you cannot eliminate cyber risk does not mean that you cannot manage it. Build your strategy around speed, automation, and integration.
Let's get back to our interview. Elizabeth Hackinson, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you.
Thank you, Peter.
So I thought we'd begin, Elizabeth, with your current role. You are the Chief Information Officer of Schneider Electric. This is not your first role as CIO. You've been a CIO at MCI, at Alcatel-Lucent, most recently prior to this one at AES in the Washington, D.C. area. You're no stranger to large global businesses with a lot of complexity. But I'd be interested in your role at Schneider Electric and what initially drew you to the opportunity.
So I am the global CIO for the company, and so my responsibility includes providing all of the IT services, collaboration tools, management of our enterprise systems for the entire company. And so we are large. We're in 100 countries, serving 144,000 employees plus our customers. So it's a relatively large IT organization, probably one of the largest that I've managed. My reasons for joining, I mean, there was a couple. One was in the interview process, I learned pretty quickly that Schneider was a people-centric organization, working in a very collaborative style and culture, and also focused on really making a difference in the world through technology, solving business problems, especially around energy. And I had also spent, as you know, 9 years in a global energy company. So there was a natural fit affinity. I guess the second would have been just the company's bold vision and its very strong heritage in innovation and technology, and also rallied around life is on everywhere for everyone at every moment, which is really important. I'd say third, it was the belief, which again, I was focusing on in my last company too, strategically on this increase in urbanization, industrialization, and climate change, which you know, we believe can be achieved through innovation, especially digital. And then lastly, I would say that it was about the future of electricity. You know, again, coming from where I had been for 9 years, you know, I had studied quite a bit climate change and decentralization of power, decarbonization, and, you know, I became more and more convinced that digitization was really going to help us not only support the urbanization taking place and, you know, the next industrial revolution, but that Schneider was really the leader in technologies and investments related to these trends. And, you know, obviously at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, our customers.
Very interesting, Elizabeth. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about or provide a bit of context to what you just mentioned in terms of the digitization of electricity. What form does that take? And, you know, what is sort of the vision of the organization and your team's role in that?
So when we think about the products and services that we sell to our customers, and we think about customers as, you know, being people, you know, consumers in their home, we service people in hospitals, factories, office buildings. And so when electricity enters into one of those physical locations, we are a company that has products and services to help move that electricity through that facility. And as we are connecting more of those, let's say, physical products, whether they be thermostats, UPSs, high medium voltage, we're connecting all of that basically to the internet, so the Internet of Things. And we're able to help our customers have analytics around that information. So we call them advisors. So being part of a company that is digital first, when we think about the products and services that we sell to our customers, we have to, within enterprise IT, have the same set of vision and principles around how do we take the digital technologies that our company is using to build products and services for our customers, and how do we use them ourselves? So things like the cloud, leveraging machine learning, artificial intelligence, APIs. So we're really mirroring a lot of the technologies that our product people are using to build products for our customers.
You, last month, you celebrated your 1 year anniversary with the company. I'm sure it's been quite an exciting year, given the pace of change you've described and some of the strategic points that you've been focused on. We'll talk a little bit more about some of those in a moment. But I wonder, actually, you were not new to the industry, as you say, and I'm sure that gave you a bit of a shorthand and gave you an advantage on the right kinds of questions to ask as you transitioned into the role. But I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the way in which you structured your own first, call it 100 days, in order to understand the company, its culture, the team you were inheriting, as well as some of the areas to focus on.
You're right. It was helpful to have a background in energy. And my previous company, we were on the supply side. And so joining Schneider put me on the demand side. So that was, you know, something I was interested in. So you're right. I kind of had a leg up on that. But when I walked in, the you know, Hervé was in the motion of launching the organization structure for Schneider Digital.
And I should just say that that's Hervé Couré, who's your predecessor,
yes,
who remains with the company,
yes, sorry,
as a digital officer.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, he does. Yeah, and I report to him. And so he was, you know, probably within the first 30 days of me being here, he was ready to launch his org. And there was no pressure. He wanted me to take my time. But, you know, within my first 30 days, I realized, you know, there's anxiety, right, when someone new comes in and there's a big organizational change, that I actually went ahead and I implemented the IT organization at the same time as the rest of my peers. So there was a lot of work to do within the first 30 days, just getting that organization in place. But I thought it was important to kind of settle everyone down. But I also knew that it would be, the org would be an evolution throughout the year as I learned more, especially from talking to business peers, customers, visiting employees. And I think that was another real focus of my first 100 days, was trying to speak to as many people as I could in the company. So very quickly, I had made multiple trips to Paris. I was in India. I was in many locations in the United States. And then maybe 45 days into the position, there was a need for me to fill an individual that was reporting up to me in North America had left the company. And so I was basically playing two roles, one being the global CIO and then heading up IT for North America. And, you know, at the time, it appeared to be a little overwhelming, but it was really a great experience for me because it allowed me to get into one of our largest operations in the company and get to learn the leaders from that region of the world, which if that didn't happen, I probably wouldn't have met them so quickly. And I don't think I would have gotten as immersed into some of the challenges that our operations have. So I'd say the first 100 days I was doing a little bit of double duty, but, you know, it was really a great way to learn the company and more of the leaders and the challenges and opportunities that we had in IT.
Yeah, very interesting. And you mentioned that Hervé Couré, your predecessor as CIO, has remained on, the chief digital officer to whom you
yes.
report. And I wonder actually,
yes,
you know, many CIOs come in a situation where a person has left, maybe they've been asked to leave, and then therefore there's like that much more of a mandate for change and perhaps things to correct. Obviously not the case in your case. Not only does he stay on, but you know, has a new set of responsibilities and a very important collaborator of yours, needless to say. And I'm curious, in that sort of a scenario, the differences that makes, that you've got the, in some ways, continue to enact, I'm sure putting your own fingerprints all over the plans, but the advantages of having the predecessor still there in an important role.
I think it's been a really great opportunity for both of us. So, you know, certainly knowing each other, you know, helped. And not that we knew each other very, very well, but, you know, over the years you build, you know, those relationships. When I came on board, you know, he's the chief digital officer now. And so he also has this huge organization. I would be one of his many direct reports. And he was great in that I think he was very conscious of not hovering over me and giving me the leeway. But then I, you know, completely took advantage of his of him being in the CIO role for, I think it was almost a decade. And, you know, when I needed him, I certainly reached upward, and he was, you know, always very helpful. And, you know, you just always want to make sure you're headed in the right direction. And so I feel that it was really great to have him, you know, there to help guide me along the way. But I feel that we have, you know, a very strong relationship. I feel really comfortable with him. If I'm, you know, in doubt of something or need to know if I'm directionally correct, it's a really easy conversation to have because we speak the same language. And of course, I'm very respectful of, you know, decisions that he and the team made. And we talk about, you know, transformation. And I'm, you know, I'm just, I think by nature, just very careful to respect. Because people have come in after me as well. I'm sure in the companies I was CIO, And we all make decisions based upon what's in front of us and the challenges that we're dealing with during that time. And as the years go on, you know, things change. And so I don't think, you know, at large CIOs, we make bad decisions. We make the best decisions we can given the environments that we're in. You know, and again, they just evolve. And so every step of the way, as I've been making change in the organization, especially organizationally with people, he has been, you know, again, just incredibly supportive, understands, and actually helps me think through many of those decisions.
Very interesting. And now, as I say, 12 or 13 months now into your role, I'm sure, you know, a lot of the changes that were necessary have been put in place, people, process, tools, et cetera. No doubt, of course, those will continue to be made throughout as there's no stasis for a company of your size and complexity. But I'm curious now, a bit more than a year in, where are you focusing your priorities? You've talked a bit about the digital transformation that continues. What are some other aspects of your strategic roadmap that you'd care to share?
So a couple things. One is I have this concept of, you know, it's all digital. So we are continuing to accelerate the adoption of many digital technologies, cloud, API, mobile first. And even though when I arrived here a year ago, those things were underway, we're really in a massive acceleration of pushing those technologies. It's a mind shift change to agile and DevOps methodologies, which is somewhat new to the organization, meaning you know, enterprise IT. We had a lot of talk about it last year, but we're really making the investment in training, where we're getting people together to work more in teams in the same physical location, so that we have more of a product owner. Again, mindset that's very different. Continuing to strengthen our cybersecurity posture, can never do you know, enough there, as you well know. Increase the adoption of collaboration tools for our employees. So when I had arrived a year ago, a great effort was made to implement many tools from Skype, Yammer, Teams, Office 365. And there was an adoption rate initially, but then we you know, as it's the new shiny object, right? So people use it for a while, and then yeah, we also had a couple of networking challenges that we needed to deal with that we lost a little bit of the adoption. But in the past, you know, 6 to 8 months, We're really proud of the amount of people that are using these collaboration tools. They're working differently, but you know, it's never enough. We really want more adoption and more proficiency. And then a big push on digitizing processes using RPAs. So that's something we'll push this year. We also have a lot of legacy technology, which we refer to as technical debt. And unfortunately, this legacy is probably our single source of low employee experience scores. So we have a very big effort this year to go after what we consider tech debt, technology debt. So it's the decommissioning of older applications or applications that can't be mobile, can't move to the cloud, can't support single sign-on. And so it's a really big effort for us, because even in my previous roles, you know, no one really wants to work on decommissioning applications. You know, it's not viewed as as really the sexy kind of stuff, but you know, we're to a point here where we really see it as a debt and not a dividend. So pushing that quite actively. And then again, supporting innovation with the IT organization. So I'm a big believer in learning every day. So I'm trying to support every place I can in the organization training, whether that's self-learning or bringing in people to train or sending people to classes. And I think that's the only way we can really innovate with digital technologies. Our folks have to understand what these tools do, how do you use them, and, you know, at the end of the day, how do we help our customers? So everything that we do, and I mean customers, external customers, paying customers, I'd like to think everything we do in enterprise IT has a direct correlation to benefiting our customers through our employees and the tools that they use.
Very interesting. You know, that point you raise about technical debt is a really profound one. It seems like for any organization of a certain size, and especially among the so-called digital immigrant, as opposed to digital native organizations, they will have some degree, and in many cases, a rather dramatic degree of that technical debt. And it's heartening to hear that you're going about what is, of course, always a difficult set of undertakings of actually modernizing. It's one of those things that it's difficult today. It will be, you know, a lot more difficult if you wait, you know, more time, another year, another 2 years, while more debt racks up. I'm curious if you're far enough along in that process to be able to provide some insight into how you prioritize. Are there certain factors that make kind of earlier places to modernize or to retire old technologies first versus those things that might take a little longer?
Yes, and we basically have tiered the applications. So basically in our tier 3 and 4, let's say, those are applications that they have to go. So for whatever reasons, they're old. Again, they can't support moving to the cloud. They can't support single sign-on. They might have security challenges for us. They might be high cost of maintenance. They might have horrible employee experiences. So we've categorized the applications, and that's what we're going after. And in some cases, as you continue to unpack some of the legacy, you find that you have very few users, right? I mean, we've identified some that have 5 users. So, you have to scratch your head and say, what is this application really doing? And we're going to make some tough choices. So in some cases, we're just going to shut things off. In other cases, we might look to transfer the data to an existing application that we believe has a future, or we have to completely maybe rebuild something. So we're in that process of certainly going after the low-hanging fruit right now. We're going to start to shut off applications with low users, and then we'll be tackling the more gnarly applications. But we've also taken an approach where we're dedicating some pretty senior people to doing this within Schneider Digital. So when we try to ask people to do this as part of their day job, it doesn't happen. So we've selected an individual who's been at the company a long time. She's been in IT for 30 plus years. So she knows quite well the challenges that you have when you try to decommission legacy systems. And we've surrounded her with a group of people who are also dedicated. And we're also coming up with a notion with our business peers, which is we call like the dividend and the tax. So if we put in front of them an opportunity to decommission applications that, let's say, support their operations, and they're working really closely with us with speed, and we decommission, and there's cost savings, we're going to look to kind of give them a dividend. And at this point, it could be some shared cost savings. It could be us reinvesting that money for some of their needs. But then we also have to play the tough love card. So if there is a pathway to decommission some of these applications and we get pushback, then we're working on a plan to basically say, well, you're going to pay a premium then for holding on to an application that has technology debt and is also a risk to us. So we're going to try this this dividend tax scenario, and in a year I'll tell you how it's going.
It's a deal. I like that. I appreciate you going over that with us. I also, you mentioned at the outset of our conversation, you put some numbers to highlight the complexity of your business, 144,000 employees, do business in 100 countries. I know from our past conversations, you've also noted that even the leadership team is quite spread. Number of leaders in Paris, of course, where the it is a French company, leaders in Hong Kong, you're based as others are in Boston. And I'm curious, I'm hearing, of course, some of the ways in which you make that, you and the team, bring that to life and make sure that people remain productive and in touch and so forth. You've talked about some of the collaboration tools that you've introduced as an example of that. But I'm curious also, you know, what are the things, and how else can IT play a role in ensuring that there's a cohesive culture with an organization and especially a leadership team that is so distributed?
To me, it's all about the collaboration tools that we provide, because as you mentioned, we have, have three what we call hubs. So we don't have one corporate office, and it's Boston, Paris, Hong Kong. And in fact, our CEO is out of Hong Kong. So they really rely upon the ability to have instantaneous conference calls. So we're big users of Skype. We have tens of thousands of employees who use it every single day. I think we have like 2 million minutes a day. And so there's a little bit of pressure on us because that has to be always on. And it's audio quality, it's video quality. We also have a couple of very significant telepresence rooms for those hubs. So large boardrooms where we are sharing video content and voice. So I would say that that's primarily what most of the employees rely upon for audio and video collaboration. But then we are also very active users on Yammer. I think we have 40,000 people who use Yammer, and big users of Teams as well. So we're also trying to move off of email and talk to each other more. And I'll be honest, I'm so used to Skype that even today when I went to get on this call, I looked and I'm like, oh no, I've got to actually dial a phone number and a passcode. So I think you forget, using some of these tools, how convenient they are. But, certainly, what we're doing from a networking perspective to connect, we're not only in 100 locations, but we have, 100 countries, but we also connect to over 1,000 different locations around the world. And so people, when they travel around, they also want that seamless experience. And we've done a really good job of that as well. So I can be in Boston the next day, I'm in Paris, and my computer or my laptop or my tablet, works without calling an IT person to help me get connected to a local domain. So there's been a lot done before I even arrived that really put in the base for all of these collaboration tools. But the pressure is on us every day because it's, these are tools that people want on all day long, 24/7, given what we do.
That makes sense. I also wanted to ask you, you've been a CIO for nearly a decade and a half. You've been in role, as I mentioned earlier, at some really, in addition to your current company, many different large organizations. I wonder if you can reflect, if you can think back to when you first took on the role and think about the time that's passed since then, how the role has changed. And maybe to some extent, given that change, where you see it continuing to go, that role of Chief Information Officer.
So I became CIO in 2004. And, I would say back then we were, we kind of had that internet bust, so to say. And so we were still focused as CIOs. Yes, the internet was great. We were still using it, clearly. But our role was really around systems, ERPs, services across the enterprise, really pushing on outsourcing, especially to low-cost countries, You know, and then 2008 and 9 hit, and I felt that the economic turndown, you know, around the world really affected the investments that many companies wanted to make in IT, but were reducing. And so I feel like we were in a little bit of a lull. And then as things began to improve, you know, we hit around 2013, 2014, more and more enterprises are getting comfortable with the cloud. You know, mobile employees are coming to work saying, I've got this wonderful mobile phone where I can order, you know, I can use a virtual assistant, but yet I come into my company and we're in the dark ages. So I think as CIOs now, we're, I view it as like this tremendous opportunity, given where we are with all these digital technologies now that are giving us the opportunity to really transform our companies, and not only to digitize processes, but to offer digital products and services to our customers. And I think we've only scratched the surface. And a lot of these digital technologies give us much more flexibility as well. I kind of think back to the days of the mainframe, when that was a very expensive platform for us, right? With data centers, and there was a lot of, you couldn't really move very quickly, right? It took a while to provision, and then we moved to the server marketplace where people could have servers under their desk. So, you know, to me, digital is just another evolution of technology advancing, becoming, you know, the price points make it more attractive to us. We have more processing power. We have more storage. And I also think the processing power and storage is what's helping to push machine learning and artificial intelligence, because of the volumes of data that you need. So there's just a lot going on. And as a CIO, I think we've got to get comfortable with things moving very, very fast. Like I think applications we build today, I don't even know in 5 years if they're even viable. So how do you build something really quickly? Build it for the right price, and then know in a couple of years it might already be obsolete. And you have to be comfortable with that. I think as CIOs, we also have to be comfortable with the chief digital officer role, and not feel threatened by that, but look at it as, again, another opportunity to say, you know, that role's really looking across the business. So how do we take maybe products that the company sold, and those products get digitized, right? Which is not always something the CIO did in the past. So I think there's just, you know, so much opportunity out there for us. You have to just be willing to every day learn, make quick decisions. I don't think we have, honestly, like, you know, 6-8 months to make sourcing decisions. We have to pilot. We have to implement, course correct along the way, and so if you want perfection, I don't think that's the norm going forward, which in the past, you know, it was.
Right. You know, you talked a lot about some rising trends, waves that you're surfing appropriately, those associated with digital transformation, more generally speaking. You talked about IoT, you talked about RPA, and I wonder, as you look to the future, and perhaps the answer actually is associated with some of those very same technologies, but, you know, as you think about which trends are particularly exciting to you, you know, what else comes to mind?
Well, there's so much caught up in digital, right? And there's so much to do. Like I said, I think we've, you know, just barely scratched the surface on using things like virtual assistant. I know that's something that I'm trying to bring in here, you know, for us to get off of email, or, you know, when I need help with, let's say the IT help desk, I'm actually using a virtual assistant nearby and not having to type an email. Would love to do the same with our customers for ordering or finding out their order status. I'd love to for our finance team, have them just ask questions to a virtual assistant on the close, or, you know, how much are we spending with X vendor? So I focus my excitement really around digitization, honestly, because there's so much that we can do.
Excellent.
Well, and then I guess I'm sorry.
Please, no, please continue.
And I guess my other one would be on, you know, just innovation and the notion of co-innovation. And I'm taking this from, you know, watching what our product teams are doing as they're creating connected products. They're co-innovating with third parties. And that's something that I also think is very unique to Schneider Electric, where we're opening up our R&D labs, we're co-creating, we're co-innovating with many different entities. And so I want to have the same approach within enterprise IT, because, you know, traditionally we've been very closed on that. And while we might have partners or contractors that we hire, we still keep a lot of that innovation closed. And so I want to try to model what our R&D and product teams are doing inside of IT, so that we get more comfortable with co-creation. And that may be through leveraging people in the gig economy or one of our technical vendors. But, you know, that's another area that I'm excited about for us.
Excellent. Well, Elizabeth Hackinson, thank you so much for taking time with us today. It's been great speaking with you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Peter.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Atif Rafiq, the Chief Digital Officer and Global Chief Information Officer of Volvo Cars.